Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Fan Tie, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am Jared Hill.
And I am Bad Bitch. You know what it is.
Wow.
I am Travell Anderson.
Wow.
I just wanted to give y'all a little something different, you know.
Listen, I need it because the last week has been a difficult one. The last few days have been... The depression has crept up, so give me everything that you got.
Well, we've got a good show coming up for the people and for you. Okay, coming up on the show, we're talking about all them black boxes y'all posted on Instagram last month. And Jared wants you to watch a Hulu show about a little Latin boy in our dishonorable mention. That's a shout out to Tu Wong Fu. Shout out to Nakazima Jackson.
A little Latin boy.
But first, as you all know, this is week 3 of the Max Fun Drive, right?
There are only 75 weeks in it, so we're almost through. No, okay.
We're in week 3 of 4, I believe, of the Max Fun Drive. And you all have been very, like, just super supportive of us thus far. And we hope that you can keep it going. If you have not yet supported the show, you can become a member of the hashtag FantiFam. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. By becoming a member at MaximumFun.org/join, we've told you that Max Fun is an audience-supported network, and so whatever you are able to do, particularly in this moment, we would really appreciate it. $5 or $10 is enough to keep us going.
One of the cool things that's happening this year, and we're really excited about the opportunity for people who are already members to be able to kind of shift their membership. You can boost your membership, you can upgrade, and go to a higher level and make sure that you point out that Fanti is one of the shows that you love. And that is really what helps support all of the different shows that you love. If Fanti is your primary show, you can just say Fanti. If there are other shows, you can include them as well. But we really, really appreciate all of the support. Again, you can go to MaximumFun.org/join for more information and see all the cool gifts. We've got a cool Fanti pin.
Yes.
I haven't got my Fanti pin yet.
Girl, we in a pandemic. Slow the roll. Okay.
Fine, whatever. More on that a little bit later. But yes. First, it's time to pass the popcorn. Pass the popcorn is where something is going on in the world and y'all have things to say about it. Now, mind you, it's Tuesday afternoon as we tape this episode.
Yes.
Travell and I, this is a big day. It's Emmy Day. It's Emmy nominations day, I should say.
Yes.
And let me tell you, there were some noms that... there were some noms that I was really happy about, and there were some that I was just like, how did this not happen?
So, okay, so I've got, like, a highlight reel that we're going to go through to talk about what we need to talk about, you know, while we pass the popcorn and talk about these Emmy nominations. So first up is there have still been no nominations, no acting nominations for MJ Rodriguez or Angelica Ross from Pose, and I have a problem about it, okay?
Now, let me tell you, I felt really confident that if Angelica Ross was going to get nominated, it would have been this year.
Yes.
After the Never Knew Love Like This episode 6 of last season.
Yes.
Of Pose. I just knew, like, oh, she's done it.
Because she did what needed to be done.
Yes. I was really let down by that. Pose did not get as many nominations as it should have. Billy Porter did get nominated, though.
He did. He remains to be the only person that has gotten, like, any of the big nominations, right? Which, you know, we can have a long old conversation about how the cis black man is still, you know, getting the attention
only one
on the show
full of trans people,
full of trans people and non-binary femmes and all of that. But, you know, we're gonna say that for another day because we got more highlights. Okay. In good news, Insecure nabbed 8 nominations, including for Best Actress for Issa Rae, Best Supporting Actress for Yvonne Orji, and the show itself was nominated for Best Comedy Series.
Now, I have to say, what was interesting to me about this was, I think this is the best Insecure has ever done at the Emmys, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
But I also found it interesting because this was the season that I think was most difficult for people who love the show, because, you know, we're seeing Issa and Molly going through this fight this year, right? And, like, it was a difficult season for people who love the show because it wasn't always as fun to watch, but it was hard. It was hard conversations that they were sparking from that show. So it was interesting to see that this year was the year that they really showed out at the Emmys.
Yep, shout out to them. Honorable mention note for a Black Lady sketch show got a couple nominations. So I just want to, you know, get them a little shine, you know, throw some shine their way. But in other bullshit, there was this article written by the Daily Beast with the headline, "What the hell do Latinx actors and shows have to do to get an Emmy nomination?" There were no Latinx nominees this year, with a particular, you know, highlight of Justina Machado and Rita Moreno from One Day at a Time, the cast from Vida, who Laura really loves and enjoys Vida. I really think that One Day at a Time, I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't watched it.
First two seasons are on Netflix, and then they got canceled, and it was picked back up by Pop TV. But I really enjoy it. I think it's a very cute, you know, show. It's obviously a remake of the original Norman Lear show.
Right.
But it's so good.
I mean, I think it also highlights for us, like, I mean, I think Sandra Oh is, again, the only Asian American actress who's nominated, and it just highlights like how little representation there is for, you know, Black and brown actors. I mean, Black folks obviously this year. I was not surprised to see so many Black actors this year, considering the environment that we live, the climate that we're in right now. But we still need to see a lot more representation for people of color, for our Asian American. There's no Native American representation on television that I can think of. And so that, yeah, it's bad.
Well, in other good news, Zendaya was nominated for Best Actress for Euphoria. Are you a Euphoria fan?
I started Euphoria, but I have not really finished it. It's one of the shows that I really need to get back into. It was a lot when I started. I was like, holy shit, this is going to be something else.
If you want to see a show and find out what the kids are doing these days, that's why you watch Euphoria, okay?
See, I don't know if I need to watch it then.
Listen, honey, it will give you the anxieties, okay?
Yeah, but it was a beautiful show. Like, visually, it's a stunning show. I feel like if I were really into drugs, it would probably be like something I would like. I don't know what acid does to your brain or whatever, but I would imagine, like, if you're on something watching Euphoria, you're probably loving it.
Yeah, what's interesting is that you mentioned like how Euphoria looks, and actually a lot of people mention how Euphoria looks in terms of the cinematography and all that, but they did not get a cinematography nomination,
which is incredible. Like, how was that possible?
Like, how you watching Zendaya but you not watching the red? Like, I don't understand.
Between cinematography, I feel like people are always like, what are all these other categories? When you think about all those jobs that you see in the credits, like,
yeah,
there are Emmys for most of those jobs that go out. But like the colorist, the editor, the visual effects people, like that show is a stunning show. So
Also in shitty news, there was no representation from the Clark Sisters Lifetime movie. And I already told y'all that Anjanou Ellis as Maddie Miles Clark deserved all of the awards. I mean, it's Lifetime, so they probably just didn't watch it, you know, if I'm being honest. Which is unfortunate, but you know, I want to give Anjanou Ellis some coins, some, you know, give her flowers, as they say.
You're giving her money?
I'm fictitious one, like the you remember back in the day the chocolate gold coins.
You know what? Moving on.
That's what I'm giving her.
I also know that you're frustrated about a nominee who continues to get nominated.
Okay, so let's talk about it. They keep nominating Anthony Anderson for Best Actor in a Comedy for Black-ish, and I got questions.
So here's the thing. I enjoy Black-ish.
Same.
I watch it. I watch all the episodes. I'm current. I don't know that Anthony Anderson has ever felt like, what a performance.
No one is watching Black-ish for Anthony Anderson. You might be there for Tracee Ellis Ross, who also got nominated and deserves, okay?
Yes.
You might be watching for Jennifer Lewis, who, legend, okay,
I mean,
icon.
Come on. Absolutely.
You might be watching for, what's that other guy named? Is it Lawrence Fishburne?
Yes. Ike Turner.
You might be watching for, yes, Ike Turner, What's Love Got to Do With It? Waiting for Angela Bassett to get her Oscar for What's Love Got to Do With It.
That's probably not going to happen, but I can't promise that. But like, this is the first time I've ever been able to see Lawrence Fishburne and not see him as Ike Turner.
Mm.
Like, I saw him as Ike Turner for probably a decade after seeing him in that
movie.
With
a trauma.
Listen. But I also want to acknowledge that this year in the supporting actor in a comedy series category, 5 of the nominated 8 actors were Black men, which was crazy to me. That was like a really surprising moment to see that much representation. But then in the supporting actress in a comedy series, It was just Yvonne Orji from Insecure. So those numbers were interesting to me.
Well, you know how diversity works. The black cis men get it first, then the black cis women about 7 years later, and then we still waiting on the black trans women to get it. So when we finally get it, then I'll let you know. I mean, Laverne Cox is nominated for her 2-minute role in the season finale of Orange is the New Black. So we going to honor her in that, but... That's
but also, it. Like, in guest actress, I don't know how Tiffany Boone is not nominated for the crazy good work that she did in Little Fires Everywhere. I don't know how that happened because I won't say it's never happened, but I will say I've never seen a guest star come in and do what she did on that show.
So good.
And we stand.
Alrighty then. It's time for a bricky break. When we come back, Z-Way already done told y'all.
Now, you're a vociferous reader. How many of these books have you read?
Honestly, of the 9 books that I recommended on my Instagram, I've read 4.
Wow.
But I've ordered the other 5 from Black Bookshop, so I would like my ally cookie now.
There are no cookies in this game.
There ain't no goddamn cookies in this game, honey. We'll be right back.
Okay, so as you know, we are in the middle of the Max Fun Drive, and we wanted to read a letter from someone that listens to the show. This is an Apple Podcast review, and the name that they put in is Colls, C-O-L-L-S, 061. It says, love it! Travell and Jerry acknowledge that people, themselves included, are complicated, and that we don't always have to be 100% for or against everything. It's thoughtfulness and critical thinking as opposed to cancel culture. I appreciate that there are episodes based on the title I think I might not be able to connect to or empathize with, but I always do, and I learn so much from them. This came from Calls 061, and we just appreciate the conversation about the show. I know for myself, I like to think of Fanti as kind of the counter to cancel culture, which probably should go on a t-shirt somewhere. But this is really kind of talking about what we aim to do every week on the show is show that there's nuance, that there is more than just one way to feel about something. And that as I look at things, they kind of exist on a spectrum of myriad different things.
Yeah. And if you haven't gotten tired of telling you yet, we really would like your support in doing the work that we do. You can join the Fanti fam and the Maximum Fun family by going to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can give us $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month.
Jared, $1 million.
There you go. There you go. Whatever you can do, we understand it is a tough moment for a lot of people. But if you do have it, we would really appreciate it. And there are different perks that you get as a Max Fun member and a Fanti fam member, depending on the level that you are able to come in with. Starting at the $10 level, we have this unique pen that Jared mentioned. That's this enamel-like shirt pen that you can use and adorn yourself and show the world that you are part of the Fanti fam, as well as some other great perks as you go up the I was going to say the leaderboard, but y'all
the
know
ladder?
What I mean.
I think you're talking about
the ladder. Jacob's ladder. Yes.
Who's Jacob?
It's a Bible reference, you heathen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jesus.
Definitely make sure to go to MaximumFun.org/join for your information on how you can join or upgrade your membership. Again, that's MaximumFun.org/join. We thank you so much for being a part of the Fanti fam and for joining Maximum Fun. Let's get back to the show. All right, welcome back to Fanti. So this week, we're diving into one of the buzzwords that's been making me cringe. For the sake of this conversation, we're going to be framing this conversation around allies around race. We obviously live in a time where there's a lot of conversation about blackness, anti-blackness, racism, and so much more. Mm-hmm. And white people and non-black people need to hear this for the sake of understanding what your work is. Black people need to hear this conversation for the sake of reframing how we think about our role in these conversations about allies. But anyone who calls themselves an ally of any group should really be thinking about all of this. Our guest this week is the executive director of the Stonewall Community Foundation, an organization you've probably heard me reference here before. He's also spent years in activism and advocacy, doing direct action. His name is Jarrett Lucas. Yes, his name is Jarrett. Two R's, two T's. It's not a perfect name, but he's almost there with Jared Lucas. He also just happens to be my very best friend who also has the same name as me. Welcome, Jared Lucas.
Hello, Jared.
Hi.
How
doing
are you?
How are? I'm doing really well. How are you tonight?
We all right.
Good. Thank you so much for being here. I wanted to have you on this show because you and I have had so many conversations about race, racism. And recently we had a conversation about allyship that was interesting to me because you were like, I really hate the way that people use the word ally. And I think it's a completely wrong framing. Why is that?
How much time do we have? This is the beginning of a series. So words are stand-ins for ideas. Words have meaning. We know this. And I think that when we're talking about issues of oppression, we have to examine every word we use. We have to interrogate the ideas that underlie those words. And for me, the word ally has a few problems. The first, I think, is actually kind of alluding to what you were just saying, Jared, right? This idea about role and positioning. So if I am waging a war against something and I identify myself as an ally, I am suggesting, it is implied, that I have a very specific role, and that is one of a helper, backup, standing in solidarity with whoever war it may be. And so I think that the first issue I have with the word is the suggestion that when we're talking about racial injustice, when we're talking about racism, when we're talking about taking on whiteness and white supremacy, that people of color, and specifically Black people, are the tip of the spear. It is our cause to fight, and white people can join us in solidarity and be allies, which suggests then that it is not their cause, in fact, that the responsibility to end white supremacy, the notion of white supremacy, the responsibility to fight racism and uproot it in every aspect of our lives is not theirs.
Jared is looking enlightened, as I'm sure this isn't the first time he's heard your explanation of this.
No, yeah. I mean, when you said that to me, I was like, well, goddamn. Yeah. I mean, right, because the ally is the person who comes to aid, and like, this is not our work. So what language do you feel like we should be using then? If an ally is someone that's coming to aid, like, how should we be reframing that?
So that question actually gets to the second problem that I have with the word ally that I think I need to offer.
Did he just read me on the show where I've been?
I think this gets to a second very prominent issue for me, and I think I want to offer it as context for some suggested vocabulary. So I get it, right? We see that if someone is going to care about social justice, social issues, a constituent of that is that they care about people, right? I can't imagine someone committing their lives to fight and end racism and take all that comes with that if they're not doing it from a place of care and commitment to other humans. However, the word ally also, it denotes a relationship with people, right? I'm an ally to these people. It actually decenters the supposed ally's relationship with the problem, with the system of oppression that they're actually taking on. And so I think there's an examination of the privilege that one must have to be able to, for themselves, embrace a label that puts front and center the good that they intend to do, and put that in relationship with people and not actually name the problem. It's a muting or a dilution, I think, of what we're actually talking about.
So let me know if I'm hearing you correctly. You're saying like the idea of being an ally, if we're using race as our framing, right, is odd because like white people created this problem with race and racism and white supremacy and anti-Blackness, and then stepped away from it as if it were not theirs, and then reapproached it from the other side as, well, what do we do with this thing? Is that what you're getting at?
Except the last part, because ally doesn't say, what do we do with this thing? We say, how can we help these people? Right? It doesn't actually suggest taking on the system. And that's why I say it's a dilution or a muting of the real commitment that we need from white people, right? I use myself as an example. I am certainly a feminist. My political ideology, the way I show up in the world, is so deeply rooted in feminism. However, when it comes to my identity and experience as a man socialized and conditioned to be a man, for worse or worser, in this world, the reality is that I'm conditioned to be sexist. And so I can't just move around the world saying, I'm feminist, and defining myself by that ideology without first acknowledging I'm sexist. That's real. And so I think about my experience with that, with these two words, and I go, you know what? Far more good and important understanding and introspection has come from being able to say I'm sexist than it has from being able to say I'm feminist, right? Because it's actually defined the first order of work in ending sexism for me. That's my responsibility as a man. And the first order of work is figuring out what that means for me and my body and my mind and my life as I show up in this world. And so you have to start there. And I think a lot of white people skip that part and go right to, I'm doing good. I'm committed to people. I'm an ally. And it actually overlooks a lot of the work that's necessary.
So I feel like over the last couple years, you know, people have been like trying to move away from like using ally, right, as a term for folks who are, you know, in the struggle with people. And I've heard the word accomplice used a lot. Do you feel similarly about the word accomplice in terms of the roles in which, you know, people are who are supporting different communities, different movements should be playing?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sure, so do. Next question. I want to talk.
No, accomplice registers the same for me. So does the word co-conspirator, right? It suggests that it's not your work. And I think some words, some phrases that work for me are race traitor. Baby, I need you to betray whiteness.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Saboteur, I need you to sabotage the very idea that white is supreme.
Oh, yeah.
Right? These are strong words.
You like right? strength over here, honey.
These are strong words. They're strong-faced words. And so I understand that people are not excited to go out into the street and go to their place of employment and go on TV and say, I'm a race traitor. however, I think that when we're actually talking about the work that needs to happen, that's a better description.
Yeah.
It's more accurate.
So now, you know, over the last month or so, the girls have been posting, you know, black boxes on Instagram and social media, you know, as a form of, I guess, showing their support for the movement. I remember a couple years ago, you know, people were wearing safety pins because they wanted to, like, let people know that they were, you know, allies. And it seems like to me like there's a confusion between like what people think is the work, what they think support of a movement looks like, and what like support of a movement actually looks like. So for you, where do you think like people get kind of their conception of what it means to support folks wrong?
A few different places. So first, I do want to say that signals of commitment and intention are important, right? And so when, I think it was after Trump was elected in 2016, he started his shenanigans, people looked at the groups that he was attacking, his administration was attacking, and said, how can we make visible the fact that we stand with them and have their backs? And so the safety pin was born, or the use of the safety pin in that way. And, you know, I will be on the subway or in the great before, prior to the pandemic, I would be on the subway and I would in New York City, and I would see people with, white people specifically, with Black Lives Matter stickers, right, on their backpack or a bag. And that did something for me. I was like, okay, right?
I see you, white lady. You. Okay.
I see you, white lady.
Okay,
right?
Karen.
Right.
And I felt good seeing that signal of support. Now, they could be racist as hell, and probably were, right? Because it's not a destination at which you arrive and you're just on the other side of the line, right? It's an ongoing process. It's a daily practice. But sending that signal that that is their commitment, that is their intention, and very deliberately so that other people could see it, is powerful. That said, this question of where do people get the work wrong, I think that a lot of people are driven by this idea that racism is out there in the world, that it is this easily identifiable thing, this hyper external thing that you can see and denounce and speak out against. And they don't realize that the fundamental work relies on individual work, right? Racism at an institutional level, at a cultural, at a systemic level, could not stand if every white person in this society and in these institutions said, what is the work I have to do in my own way of being in the world? It couldn't stand. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and it's not, I think there's a piece of it that is really rooted in misinformation about what racism is, right? We see racism as, you know, Black people hanging from trees, or Black people enslaved, or Black people being stripped of their rights, or being barred, disenfranchised from certain freedoms. We see it as Black people being killed in the streets by police officers. And we don't think about the daily microaggressions that white people perpetrate.
Mm. The everyday racism, if you will.
The everyday racism. The everyday everybody, like the way that Black people experience racism, and people of color, right? Not just Black people. People of other races who are non-white as well experience racism on a daily basis. And it's not always these, you know, extreme examples that we see in textbooks and history books or on the news.
I wanted to get into this idea of what people think the work is versus what the work is, and frame it in a personal experience. So I've been really challenged over the last month and a half or two, and Jerry, you're very aware of this situation, where the show that I used to be on, my co-host there, she and I had a very contentious relationship, as Travel takes a drink of the water. and like I've debated how to talk about this and whether or not I should talk about it. But then I've also recognized that a bit of my hesitance has been like this idea of like protecting this person. And to be very honest with you, this happened on the day where the Amy Cooper story took the turn that she was going to be charged with the crime. And Christian Cooper came out saying that he didn't want that to happen to her. And that afternoon, I was like, oh, he's so ridiculous for that. And then later that night, I saw a post that my old co-host did with various different friends of mine who she's brought onto the show, Travel included, which I told everyone that I brought onto the show, like, I'm leaving the show for my own reasons. And I'm not saying that you have to like not go on the show, like do your media, like get your life. I'm not offended. But then I saw the framing of it, and it was, you know, we'd had on all these different people, and I've just really gotten an education, and it's been so important to me. And that was interesting to me because it seemed as if she thought the work was bringing on Black people and having them talk about racism and their experiences of racism. However, the work was to then go back to the person who you offended and hurt, who ended up quitting their job because of the way that you behaved at work every day and giving up their livelihood because of the way that you were. The work was then going back and saying like, wow, I really fucked this up. Or wow, I really hurt you and I'm sorry about that. Or wow, I didn't realize that that the way that I was behaving would make you quit your job. You know what I'm saying? And so it really, really, really upset me because I was frustrated to see that like this performative angle of it, which was, I want people to see that I'm doing the good thing, right? That I had these Black people come on and like, we're having the difficult conversations and, you know, celebrate me, right? But like, the real shit that you did, you haven't come and corrected that. You haven't made it any better. You haven't, you know, apologized for it. And that is the distinction, I think, in like what white people think is the work. Mm. Putting up the Black square, having the Black Lives Matter sticker, you know, calling their friend and being like, are you okay? But the real work is, wow, I need to do some work on me. And I need to try and right the wrongs of what I've done and where I've really fucked this up for other people. And that's what really got me into this conversation about like, what is allyship, right? And there's no coincidence for me that her name is Allie and it's spelled the same way as ally. But like, I was just really, really upset. I'm just being honest. Like, it really, really pissed me off. And I've been trying to figure out what to do with that.
You know what you should do? You should start a podcast.
You know.
and around episode. How many episodes? Yeah. He's
like, somewhere in the 20s.
Somewhere in the 20s.
I think you need to have a conversation right. about it. I get really frustrated about this idea of yeah. what the work is, though, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, right? Because, you know, this is also something that, right, applies to, you know, not just white people and talking about racism, but it applies to cis people when it comes to transphobia, right? It applies Absolutely. To, you know,
gender, sexuality, ability.
I was going to say something else that was in my head, but I decided to opt out of it and just laugh internally. But yes, it applies to all these other, like, different communities. You were going to say something, Jared.
Just a mantra that has always been important in this work. And that is, if you are facing down a violent, destructive, deeply rooted system that harms people, if you're facing that down and actually doing the work, it's probably not going to feel great. Mm. You are certainly not going to have an overarching feeling that is positive about yourself and your experience in the world if you are a person who in that system is positioned with privilege and advantage, right? That work is going to feel messy and difficult. It's going to strain you and stress you. It's going to hurt. Mm. Mind you will not be harmed in the process, but it's going to hurt. And I think that's the first indicator. If you're in your own concept showing up as an ally and you just feel good about it all the time, and I don't mean like a deep fundamental, like I'm doing the right thing in this world kind of feel good. I mean, you can just smile about all the conversations you're having and pat yourself on the back and be lauded by other people.
And be you're
probably not doing the work. Because if you're actually taking on a system that threatens people's lives in the daily, you are then a threat to the system and you will become a target. Mm. And once that system has you in its sights, ain't a whole lot of good that's going to come out of that. Feeling good, at least. And so I think that's a good test for people who, whatever language they're using, are trying to show up for other people and fight against a system of injustice, know that it's probably going to feel harder and more painful than it is positive and wonderful.
Mm. This gets me thinking, Jared, the other Jared. Oh, Lord, this is going to be too much Jared in every...
Hold on. What I will never be is the other Jared. Not around here.
Except you just won't.
What
I don't need you to revisit this.
What happened?
Anyway.
Go ahead, Travell.
Well, so, but I'm thinking of, you know, some of the letters that we get from our, you know, well-intentioned white listeners who, you know, like to share a number of their thoughts, right, around the conversations that we have, particularly as they relate to race specifically, and how we get a lot of people who... they make
want
it
us to center whiteness.
Well, yes, but they make a point to like talk about like how much they feel like they're learning from us and from listening to us. And I often mm-hmm. think about like, okay, so you listened into the conversation, you took something away from it, but like, what are you doing with it? And we mm-hmm. never have anybody, you know, talk to us about like what they're doing with the information that they've learned. It's just that, oh my God, I've gained something, but it's like the idea is that you're supposed to, you take that shit and you go do something with it.
That points to another issue that people think it is learning, that the work is just becoming informed, right? And this is why one of the steps we see in people's journey, and to be clear, education, information is very, very critical.
Yeah.
However, it is not the end of the work. It's not the destination. And we see a lot of people who start their journeys by asking other people what their experiences are. They're asking people what books to read. They're asking, often people of color, mind you, what they should be doing. And so what they're doing is gathering information. And I think sometimes we focus on paralysis, right? What happens when you feel completely overwhelmed by this daunting hundreds-year-old system that is really pervasive, really effective. Sometimes you just shut down and go like, I'm gonna bury my head in the sand. But there are other kind of diversionary tactics that people use when confronting that sense of overwhelm. And one of them is to focus on passive work, mm-hmm. right? Again, information, critical. But it is also quite passive, right? Like, yes, learning is an act. But in terms of what you're doing with that information, you could do nothing, right? And so I think one of the challenges is moving people from information, which is going to be a stream of learning throughout their lives, probably, towards an action plan. What am I actually supposed to be doing with this information? How can I use this? And the reality is white people specifically, can get started long before they have, I would say, like, you know, kind of a scholarly education around race and racism. They don't need that. James Baldwin, one of my favorite quotes of his, said that if you ask white people if they would want to be Black in America, they would say no. Mm-hmm. And that tells me that they know everything they need to know about racism, mm. right? It's a reality. It's a truth that people see what's going on. They know where they sit and know where they don't want to be in this society. And so that's a really great starting point. That's a whole lot of information.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question about this piece that you had wrote on the Stonewall Community Foundation website titled Black mm-hmm. Pain, Black Power. Hallelujah. The hallelujah was my addition. And so I want to read a quick quote and then I want to ask you some questions about it. So you said, but make no mistake, this pain is also a teacher. This pain has taught me to use the words we, they, and all with precision when talking about injustice. This pain has taught me that protest is always about bearing witness and only sometimes about winning. The first thing that like struck me about that is when you say this pain has taught you to use the words we, they, and all with precision when talking about injustice. What do you mean by that?
All lives matter. what's the issue with that, right? There is one word in that a lot of people have spent far too much time talking about, unpacking, arguing, debating. There are words that imply collective identity, collective role, collective positioning, collective responsibility that totally disregard that. When we're talking about a system of oppression, injustice, inequality, inequity, we're talking about a hierarchy, mm. right? It is a system of oppression because there are people on the bottom, because there is a group at the top, because there are people kind of on this gradient from top to bottom. And if we collapse that system with our words by saying things like, we're all in this together, right? Mm. Or all lives matter, what we're doing is actually collapsing the reality. We're denying the reality of a system that puts some people on top, a small group of people on top, and a whole lot of other people on the bottom in the case of racism. And I think that it's a regression step, right? Like it actually moves us away from where we're supposed to be heading by openly acknowledging that racism is real and that it is in fact a hierarchy. And we're not sharing the same burden mm. by living in the system. It affects all of us. I would argue that it harms all of us. I would also argue that most white people don't understand how it harms them. Also important work. But the reality is we don't have the same experiences. We don't share the same burdens in the system.
Everybody's talking about activism. Everybody's talking about protest in this particular moment. But, you know, not everyone is an organizer. Not everyone is comfortable or wants to be, you know, out in the streets, you know, and protesting in that particular way. I'm wondering, from your vantage point, what does activism look like to the non-organizer, to the non-protester?
I think if you're serious about taking on racism, again, or any kind of placeholder system of injustice, you don't have to move towards activism. You don't have to become an advocate, right? Those are specific things that have specific meanings. What we do need from you, though, is to be ready to disrupt and to intervene. Mm. And so that work is really hard when you're having dinner with a group of friends, beloveds, maybe family members, and something goes said or something is unsaid that actually reinforces a system that you're committed to fighting. You have to do something. You have to intervene. You have to disrupt that. The only way that systems change is with disruption. And that can be a powerful and productive contribution from a person, but it is always hard. It's hard, especially the first time, or if you're not practicing it regularly. So I actually don't think that the goal needs to be becoming an activist. It doesn't need to be, you know, leading protests in these streets and writing new legislation and, you know, being the vanguard of cultural change. I think it actually comes down to learning how to disrupt injustice and prejudice when you see it, when you hear it, when you're part of it, or when you perpetrate it yourself, right? Being able to pause, recognize it, and then do something on the other side. Don't go tell somebody what you witnessed later. There's something to be said about, you know, assessing safety and all that. But again, disrupting a system that is a violent system means assuming a level of risk, personal risk, that might be to your livelihood or your life in some cases. It definitely means sacrificing some of the power you might have, sacrificing most certainly your comfort. But you have to figure out how to do that. The good thing is that there are plenty of us among us that learn how to scale that up, that learn how to do that at a really, really high level, where it's impacting lots of people, hundreds, thousands, millions of people. But I would never, ever dismiss or discount the power of being able to do that at an individual and interpersonal level.
Jared, I appreciate you being on the show today and being able to have this conversation with us and maybe like helping people to shift their ideas about how they, what their work is in this movement, right? And getting away from just even the concept of allyship where it's, you know, coming in to be an aid, but like to really taking on the work. So I really appreciate it. Tell people where they can find out more about you and Stonewall Community Foundation.
You can learn about Stonewall Community Foundation at stonewallfoundation.org. And I am 72 at heart, so I'm not on Instagram.
I was
going to
say, that was his way of saying, you don't want to follow me on social media because I don't do anything.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We want to know what you think about this, though. You can tweet at us or hit us up on Instagram at Fanti Podcast. That's Fanti Podcast. All is one word. You can DM us. You can hit us on Twitter. Or you can use Travel's new hashtag, Fanti Fam.
Fanti Fam. Ow.
We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
All right, beautiful people. We've been telling you for the last few weeks about this wonderful company called Ardo Wigs that you all should check out if you are looking to spice up your do. Maybe if you are a drag queen, okay, or a drag king. Okay, or if you just, you know, like to get into a little cosplay or like a little other play, all right? Mm-hmm. Ardo Wigs is a enthusiastic supporter of Fanti. They were founded by a wife and wife team of cosplayers who, when they couldn't find the products on the market that they needed for themselves, they decided to make it, okay? Jared and I both have wigs, and I actually went on a mini vacation this past week and went to the Palms.
Did you take your wig with you?
I took my wig with me.
Say more.
There may or may not be photos of me in the wig.
Oh my god.
To be clear,
wait,
I said,
do I need to
may or
I
may
need
not
to text?
I said I may say, or may I, not. Okay.
No. Do I need to text your bae about getting these?
That's assuming they exist. But the point is, okay, if you need a wig, okay, check out Ardo Wigs.
That's right. Ardo Wigs are made of high quality, heat resistant fibers and are double thick and extra large to fit all head sizes, even my big old cabeza.
Classic yes, fiber cabeza! Is
okay. We've really been shouting out the Spanish this week. I really just want to shout out everybody. Their classic fiber is durable and able to be styled and restyled, while silky fiber is smooth and great for longer haired wigs prone to tangling. They're a U.S.-owned company focusing on quality and customer service and giving back to their communities. And for a limited time, listeners can use code ARDAFANTI to receive 10% off their purchase of $30 or more. Just go to ardawigs.com. That's ARDAWIGS.com and enter ARDAFANTI as one word at checkout. That's ardawigs.com and enter ARDAFANTI at checkout and create with us. This week, the show is also brought to you by just the idea of voting. When things in this world feel like they're going off the rails, take some solace in a new limited series podcast that will be your guide to voting and elections all the way through Election Day. It's called Vote, the podcast. If you ever felt powerless, overwhelmed, or just plain lost when it comes to voting or elections, Vote! The podcast is here. There's an exclamation point after vote, so I'm enjoying that.
You're our fool. The podcast is hosted by Kat and Andrea, who are experts from Vote.org and Spread the Vote. And they are inviting some of their favorite activists, celebrities, and voting rights crushes to help them answer your biggest questions about voting. They just released an episode featuring the hosts of the Call Your Girlfriend podcast and the actor and activist Bradley Whitford. And it talks about vote by mail, aka absentee voting, and why it's critical to shorter poll lines and the health of our nation, why it's wrongfully controversial, and what to look out for in your state.
A quick reminder, we are less than 100 days away from the election, so it's really important that you're getting engaged and figuring out how you're going to vote, because when that time comes, it's going to be an interesting week. Vote, the podcast, is available right now. Surprise. Subscribe to Vote in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to this podcast. Just search Vote! Exclamation the podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back, beautiful people. It is now time for I'm going to do a quick listener feedback section. I wanted to read out a text that I got from one of my good Judies, Bianca, fresh out of Brooklyn, New York, okay?
Oh.
What's up, okay? She is a longtime supporter and member of the Fanti fam before, you know, folks were even, you know, giving, you know, and supporting us. She was listening to our last week's episode about Mr. Two Quarters, okay? Mr. Five, what is it? Five Dimes, Ten Nickels.
I was going to see if you were going to give them all, because I knew you were breaking it down in your head.
Pennies, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
And she just said, listening to this 50 episode and LOL, Jared been in the streets and now he is scared of the Rona. Stay your ass at home and you wouldn't worry, LOL. And then she wanted to know how you got your results so fast.
Wait a minute.
We got a little bit of feedback from folks who I think weren't perhaps listening to your full description.
Yes, because I was getting tweets from people like, you out here wilding? And I was like, that's not what I said. I had a Twitter exchange with one of the listeners. I was like, no. I didn't say I was out here hanging out with friends without a mask. I said we socially distanced when we ate. We took off our masks so we could do that. And then we put them back on when we were done eating, because they have not figured out how to make a mask where I could eat a beef patty through it. So that. Now I want another beef patty. Anyway, so first of all, Bianca, really aggressive message.
You are disrespectful. Protect really, black women.
Listen, really aggressive message. Not exactly accurate. I have been outside the house, but I always have a mask on. I'm always trying to keep myself away from other people. Like today I had to go right in the park because I had to get out of the house, but like there was nobody within 100 feet of me. Right. And so like,
praise the
Lord. I'm always like trying to figure out ways that I can be outside safely, but it's, you know, it's difficult. Everybody's trying to figure
it out. It is difficult. All right. We're going to get to our dishonorable, me and Chong.
Yes, that's right. It's time for a dishonorable.
Yes, you spoke over me. Go ahead. Go on. You want to be
in control. Well, it says Jared.
You want to be in control so much. Go on.
You know dishonorable what? Let me tell you something.
What you going to do?
These are the stories or the people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. You want to go first?
I will go first, okay? And I'm actually going to do 2-in-1, all right? And I'm going to make some streaming recommendations for y'all, okay? First is going to go, what?
The Spanishification of recommendations.
Listen, I hope nobody is offended by me being trash, okay? Wow. So I want to first go give an honorable mention to Rami on Hulu. Who's the writer, creator, director,
Rami Youssef.
He was nominated for an Emmy this morning. So was, I believe, Mahershala Ali, who's a guest star on the second season. But it's such a good show. You know, it opens up for people who don't know, basically just kind of gives you a little bit of a peek into the lives of, I think they say Arab American Muslims. And there's this really cute moment where one of the guys is talking about how it's Muslim, not Muslim with a Z. He's making fun of like American folks who say Muslim, you know. It's really funny. Maybe you gotta be there to see it. But I want to give that shout out. And then also a shout out to Indian Matchmaker on the Netflixies, okay? It is such an engaging, cute little show. Didn't think I would enjoy it, but a lot of people are enjoying it. So I think you all should check that out. It's just something easy.
So many people talking about this show, and I feel like I saw it pop up when it first came out, and I was like, okay, what is this? And I didn't end up watching it, but it's like in my queue. So you're recommending it now. Okay.
I am recommending it. It's funny talking and laughing about people. So,
okay.
You know, it just is.
Well, while we're giving out recommendations, the new show that I love and just flew through last week was Love, Victor. It's based on the Love, Simon film that has now become a television series on Hulu. And I knew that I was going to enjoy it. But like when I tell you, I flew all the way through the show in less than 36 hours. Like I watched one or two episodes the night before, and then I watched the whole rest of the season the next day. It's such a fantastic show of following this young sophomore in high school, and he's figuring himself out. Love, Simon was about, you know, a young white guy figuring out his sexuality. Love, Victor is that same thing, but they are a Colombian family, and he references back to Simon and says, like, you had this experience here at this school, but this is what my experience has been like. And I just think it's a beautiful show, and it just has some fantastic actors. There's some guest appearances by folks that we know, Natasha Rothwell from Insecure, Ali Wong from stand-up comedy greatness, and so many other people. So check out Love, Victor on Hulu.
Love, Victor is so cute. I did a review of it for Extra out of Toronto. And I will say, because, you know, it's not perfect. You know, I just got to let people know it ain't perfect. It's got some issues, but it is really cute, very enjoyable, and all of that. My last honorable mention is going to the one and only Miss Slay Coulee. Look at the edges she snatched today. Our reigning RuPaul's Drag Race All-Star Season 5 queen.
Spoiler alert.
Listen, if you ain't seen it by now, then oh the well, okay? You will never
see it.
Yes!
Ooh. Go ahead. Ooh.
Okay. But I just wanted to shout her out. I love her.
I'm sorry. I feel like I know Jordan and Laura are like, do we edit that out? Do we leave it in?
Do we keep it in? Oh, my God. People. Sorry about it. but not really sorry about it. But, yes, I just wanted to shout her out. She won another, you know, fierce black queen to add to the Hall of Fame from Drag Race. And I loved how she said on the final episode how her drag is like an homage to strong black women. And you can see it within every look. She deserves everything.
Well, since you did a 2-1-1 and then a 1, I still have 2 left. So, number 1, last week I shouted out Joy Reid for her new show, The Readout on MSNBC. And when I tell you, they murdered it in the ratings. They broke an MSNBC record for viewership, and they run their time slot and just had a fantastic week of shows. So congratulations
to
Joy.
That's what happens when you follow black women in leadership.
Listen,
okay?
When you give black women the microphone, honey, gonna murder it. So congratulations to Joanne Reed, because the show is fantastic. The numbers obviously show that people are loving it. So really, really want to shout her out. And if you have not checked out the show yet, check it out on MSNBC weeknights at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific. And then finally, I want to give a shout out to this man who, his name is Pierce Freeland, and he has a music video called Daddy Daughter Day. And it's actually just a really cute video. Again, his name is Pierce Freeland, and it's a video of these two black dads out on a daddy daughter date with their daughters. And I love the video. It's adorable. These two gorgeous little black girls, these not ugly black dads. And they're just out like having a great day with their daughters. And I just kind of love the images that we get to see of like these black fathers with their black daughters, kind of following like the whole girl dad conversation that was coming after Kobe Bryant and Gianna Bryant's passing. So just want to shout it out. You can look on YouTube for Pierce Freeland, Daddy Daughter Day, featuring Jay Gunn. It's a great video.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. That is our show, beautiful people. Once again,
are we done?
We is done. Wrap this mother up. Oh, you can't stop today. Sorry.
Wow.
Somebody out there will appreciate that.
Listen, I mean, I appreciate a Hairspray reference, but I just didn't see it coming. I didn't know. We want to ask you, if you are listening to the show on Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, you can go and leave us a 5-star review and let us know what you think about the show. And maybe like this week, you might hear your review right on the show. If you have a comment or a suggestion about this week's show, which I'm sure many of you do, you can go and hit us up on Twitter or on Instagram at Fanti Podcast, or you can send us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org.
Yes, and I want to give a shout out, as always, to all of the listeners. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting us. Again, if you ain't supported us yet, okay, and you still getting all of this good we give you every single week, you can become a member of the Fanti Fam and the Maximum Fun family, okay, by going to MaximumFun.org/join for all of that information. Our music is by the one and only Corey, Cor.ece, wherever you get Slayworthy Audio, and our graphics are always done by the wonderful, okay, the inimitable, is that a word? Inimitable?
I think you meant inimitable.
Inimitable. Inimitable.
But I don't think I even know what that means.
To Ashley Nguyen, okay? She deserves for all of the work that she helps put in and behind the scenes for our graphics. And
inimical. Inimical. inimical?
Can you come on so we can go home?
Tending to obstruct or harm. So that's not the word that you meant. I was just Googling. Never mind. Fire up the air horns. We want to thank our producers this week, Jordan Keller and Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
Ew. How you doing?
And shit.
Okay.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Sorry, my nipple's hanging out. You know, we can't post that to social media. Let me get myself together, Lord.
That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Fanti.